Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme.
Before people get to even the question of cost, their first question is, can I even do this with transit? How painful is this journey going to be? In other words, how difficult is it for me to do it? Before they're even thinking about cost.
Let's get moving, because this week's episode is all about mobility. From the rise of electric bikes and scooters to reduce emissions, to the redesign of an established staple to keep up with innovation, plus the importance of integrating transit systems and a new network connecting informal public transportation across the global south. That's all coming up right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. So, welcome to this week's programme. We wanted to kickstart the new year with a positive look, exploring new ideas and products, trying to improve the way we get around in our cities. A huge uptick in the number of cyclists in 2020 prompted cities across the globe to roll out new bicycle infrastructure and pop-up lanes. There's never been a better time to get into the saddle. Benno Bikes is an e-bike company that designs and builds sleek battery-powered bicycles. It successfully combines good looks and a smooth ride. Well, Monocle's Nick Manise spoke to the founder, Benno Benziger, weighing in on the essentials of getting people to take to two wheels instead of four. Benno starts by explaining how the company came to be.
My first business, my first company, which is called Electra, and we used to do beach cruisers and city bikes, and I've done that for almost 20 years. I've sold the business, and I guess I got a little bored and started again, and now I'm doing Benno Bikes, which I feel like there's a lot more purpose to it. So the idea was always to get more people to ride. And with Electra, we could do basically my two ingredients were comfort and style. But with Benno Bikes and with the help of the E of the motor, it changed everything, because now you get a lot more people to ride. And you get to make the bikes more useful, more capable, more purposeful. They can carry more. They can go further. They take all the hills away. You don't sweat anymore. So I think we are really kind of offering a great alternative transportation at this point. And so I'm very inspired about that.
I mean, it's interesting there when you're talking about Electra, I guess you're talking about style and ride, but then Benno Bikes obviously brings in that E element. And I'm curious, I mean, can you maybe tell us a little bit about Benno Bikes and the importance, I guess, of pulling all three of those things together?
The ride and the looks are always important, no matter what you do, right? I mean, to me, you know, I'm a designer. I like beautiful things. I like things that work. I like things that make me want to use them more, you know? So that's ride and looks is a key ingredient. But the use of the electric motor kind of elevated the bicycle into a new vehicle, you know, that really has new attributes. You can design differently. You can put bigger tires on it. They could be more heavy. You know, they don't have to really follow all the bicycle design tradition. And to us, the one ingredient that I came across is like why people can't use their bike more often is one of the main ingredients is that you can't carry enough on a bike. You know, you want to go grocery shopping, you want to go take your kids to the daycare or something, you just can't do it. So you always end up back in your car. So what we are striving for with Benno Bikes, you know, we created this category that we call utility, which is not necessarily cargo and heavy loads and refrigerators, but it's the daily, the day-to-day kind of chores that we have to do. And those bikes have to be able to do that. So we say, you know, the utility is a perfect blend out of ride, looks, and cargo capability. So you can actually use your bike more often and actually really consider it as a car replacement or car trip replacement.
Is that the big thing? You're not competing with bikes necessarily. You're trying to get, I guess, people onto bikes by taking them out of cars. So are cars your competition? Is that how you see things?
Yeah, I mean, people come to me, I mean, it's been getting less, but people used to come, oh, you know, e-bikes are cheating and this and that. And I always used to say, well, I don't know, I'm not trying to take you off your road bike or mountain bike or, like, you go ride whatever you want. You know, my objection is to get people out of cars, you know, and not only for the environmental issue. That's great. I'm happy about that, you know, but that's, I think there's more to it. You know, it's an experience that people have. I mean, you put a child on the back of the bike, take a child out of a car, put it on the back of a bike, and it will never want to go back in the car. Every morning they go down the garage and the kid's going to start pointing at the bike. Like, oh, can we take the bike? Can we take the bike? It is really interesting, you know, for people to be outside, to be more nimble on a bike, don't have to look for parking. And the experience of that kind of freedom, you know, I think is very life-changing for a lot of people. And, you know, even so, yeah, it has the assist of the motor, but I always say you still get a lot more exercise on your e-bike than you do in your car.
I guess finally, Benno, I feel like we've solved the problem of the perfect bike, or the perfect city bike, that is. I mean, what's the next step to getting more people riding in cities? Is it looking at infrastructure? Is it cycle lanes? What else needs to be done, I guess, to entice people away from their car and onto the bike?
I think infrastructure is always a good start, you know, for the cities. But I also think that in our industry, we can't just tell people to get out of their cars unless we give them a worthy, attractive, fun alternative. You know, it's easy to say, oh, you should ride your bike more often. Well, then make a bike that they want to ride. Inspire them, you know. Don't convince them by saying, oh, it's green or whatever. Make them want to ride it. You know, what is it that the thought process is like, how do I create something that I want to ride? How do I create something that makes me want to take my bike over my car? So I have to, as a designer, I have to do very compelling designs, and I have to create something that's more shiny, you know, than my experience in the car. And that's kind of where I see it. That's our responsibility as a, you know, bike designers or the bike industry. You can't just say, oh, you got to ride your bike. Well, that's easy. You got to make it compelling. And I think if you have more compelling alternatives out there and you give it also some status and some style and things that people want, and you change the perception how people look at bikes, you know, then I think if it is status to ride your e-bike to work, then more people will do it, you know. And maybe it sounds a little shallow, but it is the same for everything. And I think even in the e-bikes, you know, we are lacking kind of status, or, wow, that guy came on his e-bike and it's chic, you know, or is it cool to ride up on a date in on your e-bike or not? You know, you got to ask yourself that. And if it is, and you solve that issue, you probably get more people to ride. So, you know, it's beyond the bike design, right? It's how we portray this way of transportation.
Benno Benziger, founder of Benno Bikes, there in conversation with Monocle's very own Nick Manise. And yes, he owns a bicycle. Next, we're in Switzerland, where a new fleet of trams is taking to the streets of Zurich. Is an investment in sustainability and cleaner mobility. Monocle's Carlo Silberschmidt has the story.
Bendy new trams are zipping through Zurich and helping the city to stay on track for a cleaner future. Seeking to kickstart your morning commute with a mode of transport that mixes a charming touch of nostalgia with current concern of sustainability, look no further than Zurich's Flexity trams. The handsome vehicles, which are manufactured by Bombardier and assembled in Vienna, have been adapted for the Swiss city's terrain. Zurich's public transport operator VBZ has 5 of these new trams zipping along its network. Though more than 100 have been ordered to replace the aging Tram 2000 fleet, which has been running relatively smoothly since the 1970s. The tram's spiffy blue and white exterior, in the city's signature hues, are a good start, but it's the interiors that have really captured commuters' hearts. In a public poll by VBZ, we're in Switzerland after all, residents preferred the wooden seats to moquette or leather as they add a touch of warmth, visually at least, reminiscent of an older generation of trams. But it's not all about reliving a long-lost heyday of public transport. USB charging stations and umbrella holders can be found throughout the 43-meter-long carriage, as well as fresh air and good ventilation, even in rush hour. Meanwhile, low floors make boarding a breeze, even with a cumbersome bicycle or pram, while large windows show off the city and lake views. Despite the cozy design of these new trams, with their timber seats, safety regulations mean that the vehicles feel overlit at night. As the brightness is pumped up to prevent accidents, passengers are bathed in an unflattering glow. We're pushing for a dimmer.
Monocle's Carlo Silberschmidt in Zurich there. Up next, Desiree Bandley from our Zurich bureau tells us about a zippy new release from BMW that dodges not only traffic, but emissions too. Let's hear more.
With its versatile new electric motorrad scooter, BMW might just have heralded the next big thing in city runarounds. Do you want to make an impression on your work colleagues in 2021? Well, you could sip into the office on something that's racy, but also subtly reflective of your sustainability-minded resolutions. No, we don't mean one of those pedestrian-bothering stand-up electric scooters. We're talking about scooting stylishly through your commute on a vehicle that commands attention. The BMW Definition Motorrad CE04 is a different beast to the performance bikes that the marque specializes in, but it's an equally eye-catching machine. The design of the scooter, unveiled in 2020, is inspired by the urban environment that it was born to traverse. The bike's clean lines and generous surfaces reference sleek city skyscrapers. The formal design language is clear and clean to provide the urban look, but the scooter can also be treated as though it's a canvas, says Edgar Heinrich, head of design at BMW Motorrad. He explains that the vehicle can be easily branded in the livery of emergency services or couriers, commercial uses that the company plans on targeting. We advise leaving the sporty floral splash body kit and its Blade Runner-like stylings to one side and just enjoying the ride. Thanks to the Definition CE04's large but lean battery, its center of gravity is low, making it stable while enabling the rider to enjoy the feeling of zooming through the city.
Now we turn to the San Francisco Bay Area. A recent report has come up with some shocking statistics on the region's transit, showing that just 5% of journeys are being done on public transportation. One of the reasons cited for this is the more than 24 different public transit operators and the mammoth task of coordinating between them all. One company's work that the report noted as exemplary was that of the wayfinding firm Applied, who were noted for how they were able to better guide travellers between connections in their journeys and different transit modes. In fact, Applied is already working on connecting people through wayfinding in San Francisco's new Salesforce Transit Center. Well, Tim Fendley is the founder of Applied and a familiar voice here on The Urbanist, and he joins me now with more on both the report and this project. Tim, great having you back on the show. Tell me, when you read this report, what were some of your takeaways and why the Bay Area has such a fractured and, to be honest, failing system at the current time?
Two or three things. One is it's California, which is the state of the automobile. So that's its history. So I think a lot of it is this history. Secondly, there's about 100 cities and 27 different transit systems. Again, that's just legacy. That's how they've grown up. And they haven't kind of reached that point where they've started to consolidate and pull together and create one coherent kind of network. You've got to look at the arc of history. Look at London. The London Underground wasn't one London Underground. It was lots of different companies that created their own railways, the Metropolitan Railway Company, the Central Railway Company. And they slowly came under the same banner. They actually produced marketing items together before they were actually controlled and owned by the same people. So it's the arc of history. And I think sometimes you need to realize how young Silicon Valley and the Bay Area is.
I guess the other interesting thing is, you know, that we've spoken to you a couple of times during this pandemic. I'm always intrigued to see when people have a big vision that's long term and how they're impacted by the story that still dogs us every day at the moment. So this report does look at the impact of coronavirus in some ways, but it is thinking very, very long term. I guess the other thing that struck me was how much inequality is baked into the system as it stands. You know, that many communities who are already disadvantaged don't have great access to public transport. And also a perception, which is a more of an American thing than a European thing, but that public transport, and especially buses, are somehow the transport of the poor, and that you don't really want to waste your money funding them if you're a middle-class voter. Is this another problem that's a little bit more extreme, perhaps, in somewhere like the Bay Area?
I think that's true of a lot of transport systems in their earlier years. I'm thinking back to the first few years I was in London, sorry to keep bringing it back, but you know, the bus services, there was a real social kind of grouping that would use buses, and that's transformed in London. The bus use has gone up, has doubled since TfL came into being, and is now seen as, you know, one of the really important ways in which you get around. I think that just shows you what you can achieve, how you can make it easy to use. The more it's used, the cleaner, the better the rolling stock, the more regular it becomes. And it's a kind of a positive circle compared to a vicious circle. And a lot of transit systems in the US suffer from this vicious circle. They're not used enough, and therefore there's no investment and funding for them. And I think it's going to take some effort to try and shift that and put it into a positive cycle.
Now, the report also shines a light on the need for better wayfinding. And it puts the spotlight on an interesting project like Legible London, which, lo and behold, you're behind. So tell us, were you surprised that they're looking at this as an example of best practice? And perhaps just explain to listeners exactly what Legible London is.
Sure. It references three projects that we've been involved in Vancouver and in Greater Toronto, as well as Legible London. And I think it's an example where I think there's some research that I read recently that pointed out they were looking for the impact of cost on people using transit. And the research showed that before people get to even the question of cost, their first question is, can I even do this with transit? How painful is this journey going to be? In other words, how difficult is it for me to do it? Before they're even thinking about cost. So it's a matter of how do you make the network really easy to use. Legible London was a project to kind of add the walking mode to Transport for London's array of different transit modes. And now Transport London are adding the cycling mode in a big way, which I think is a great thing.
Are you surprised when you see these reports coming out? For example, this one, when they do come back to take your examples, are they examples in a way that can be adapted and changed and used almost in any city around the world?
Yes, I think of course they can, because they come from the logic of what the passenger wants. If you want people to travel on transit, and which is so much more efficient for road space and for the energy use and therefore the environment, it's so much more efficient. It's 50 times the number of people you can get on a piece of road that you can from a private vehicle. The barrier is that it's so hard to use. It's not running often enough. You don't know when it's going to run. You've got interchanges to tackle, which are painful, and you give up and go, oh, I'll just drive, or I won't go. And that, in some places where you've worked really hard to do it, you're starting to achieve the ability to use transit, for example, using the buses in London. In other places, it's just too hard and people don't do it, and they'll just get in their private vehicle and the roads will be incredibly clogged up and they'll be sat there for an hour and a half on a highway. So these examples of, I think the future here is making these transit systems as easy to use as a GPS sat nav when you get in your car. It's just like, well, of course we'll go on transit. It's so easy. That's the kind of vision that we're interested in, and that will help every single city on the planet.
Now, Tim, another way that you're involved in the bigger picture here, because the report highlights the fractured nature of the way that transit is run, how there's many different companies who don't speak to each other, that there is no sense of, as you say, how you could potentially make your journey across multiple different platforms without kind of, you know, scratching your head rather a lot. Now, you're involved in the creation of Salesforce Transit Center, a landmark project in San Francisco. And there, I know that you're doing a lot of work to see how people can get around, make these connections. Again, just explain to listeners what Salesforce Transit Center is and what your job is there?
Salesforce Transit Center, I mean, it's quite an investment. I think it's cost around $2 billion so far. It's a big initiative to create one of San Francisco's first transit centers, a real interchange. We're kind of used to them in Europe, but in the US, especially in the West Coast, they don't exist. And Salesforce is a very large, long building with a roof garden. It's a fantastic piece of architecture, but it's pulling together 10 or 12 different transit operators. It's built ready to add on the addition of the Caltrain underneath, underground. So it adds another floor in a future phase. And it's the first grand interchange, modern grand interchange in the Bay Area. I think it shows you there is desire and there is funding and there is a will to realize that it's piecing it together, piecing the network together is going to create a proper network and change the needle of the number of people using transit. It's been built, it's working, it's half used at the moment. It's not fully used in terms of its services. We are in there working on how do we get people to transfer seamlessly, as easy as possible. So you can jump off one bus service and onto another. Very much like the way in which you transfer from planes in an airport, which if you've done that, you'll realize how difficult that can be. So it's how do we really turbocharge that experience and make it really easy to arrive at the center, transfer and move on.
And tell me, I understand there's like some 270 digital displays. There are people there that you can go and literally ask for instructions. How do you judge whether the work you're doing is successful? Is it literally through questioning people whether they've found it simple to navigate the building, to switch between different transport providers? How do you begin to assess the value of your work?
It's about before and after studies. It's looking at how difficult people find it. What are their problems? We've got instances in our initial research that showed that people were arriving knowing they've got a 20-minute interchange at the transit station and missing their connection and then having to wait another 40 minutes for the next service. They were not happy. And we had one quoted saying, well, you know, I decided not to use the car. I wanted to use transit. I really wanted to embrace traveling on the bus, but I'm not doing it again. That was their quote. So if we're successful, that's not the experience that you have. And the experience you have is one where you are telling your friends, no, God, no, it's easy to get across town using transit. No, no, look, just use this app to do it, or this is the service, or go onto that website and you can work it out. It's really easy.
Tim Fenley, the founder of Applied. Tackling inequality in cities requires investing and promoting mobility solutions across the board. That includes reckoning with informal public transportation options, which fill transit gaps, but can be tricky to manage from a public policy perspective. This is where the Global Partnership for Informal Transportation comes in, a new initiative run by the New Cities Foundation that hopes to connect these important city players with municipalities and investors, particularly in the Global South. Earlier, Monocle's Carlotta Ribello caught up with John Rossant, the chairman of New Cities, to find out more. She started by asking him to explain what informal transportation even is.
Formal transportation, or sometimes how we refer to it as makeshift mobility, is actually how most people who live in cities move around cities. And most people who live in cities live in the cities of the Global South, where you do not have formal transportation networks of formal transportation authorities, metros, bus systems, etc. So the way people and goods most often move around cities is in rickshaws, minibuses, tuk-tuks, okadas. There are lots of different colorful names for these. And they can have two wheels, they can have three wheels, they can have four wheels. Sometimes it's a rickshaw powered by human. Others, it could be powered by an engine, sometimes electric. But it's a very, very, very important form of mobility. And it's one that is sometimes overlooked when we think about mobility from our vantage point in Los Angeles or Paris or London. And the scale is absolutely enormous. And if you just look at sort of Lagos, for example, you have around 3 million Okadas, which kind of putter around Lagos. In Kenya, there are 100,000 Matatus, which are privately owned minibuses. India has around 10 million rickshaws. Some are human powered. About 1.5 million of those are actually electric. Peseros, which are minibuses in Mexico City, account for probably over half transit in Mexico City. Around 29,000 of them go on the routes around the city. And so they're ubiquitous in the South. They're often ignored in policy. They're quite despised in planning. And very importantly, and this is what we recognized at New Cities Foundation and at Commotion and with our other partners, is that this sector is probably the single greatest way to decarbonize transportation on planet Earth. We don't have any exact figures, but it's a very, very big source of particulate pollution, carbon dioxide pollution. And so one of the reasons we have set up the Global Partnership is to look at ways to more quickly decarbonize the sector.
And of course, there's something quite wonderful about, you know, acknowledging exactly that, the cultural significance and the fact that millions of people, if not billions of people, use this as their primary modes of transportation and way of commuting and getting out and about in their cities. That's how you move towards more accessible transit solutions. You mentioned carbon goals and decarbonizing transportation. It's all part of this mobility revolution, isn't it, that we've been talking about for years now?
Totally. I mean, absolutely. And you know, again, when we meet up at Commotion LA, which is our big new mobility event in Los Angeles, or Commotion Miami, which is our big event in Miami, Florida, you know, we do tend to forget that sort of vast urban geographies that move around in very, very distinct and different ways on the southern part of the planet. And, you know, it's very valid. You know, we have to look at decarbonizing it, because if you go to cities like, you know, Delhi or Kinshasa or Lagos, I mean, they are enormously polluted. And much of that pollution, particulate pollution, is very, very damaging to your health. And it comes from, you know, these two-stroke diesel engines that are sort of ubiquitous in these cities. So we do have to change the technology, and that's important. The other thing is global technology players, the sort of venture capital world, is starting to take note of what's happening. If you look at Gojek, that began in Jakarta as a way to kind of Uberize the tens or hundreds of thousands of four-hail scooters that you have roaming the streets of Jakarta, that has become one of the great success stories of the global south in the last few years. I can't remember what the capital is valued at now, but it's attracted hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of investment, and it's worth well over $1 billion. So you see that over and over. In Latin American cities, you have unicorns in the kind of informal delivery space. So it's a sector that's very, very, very vibrant. So we're glad to look at it closely.
Well, that was John Rossant, the chairman of New Cities Foundation, speaking to Monocle's Carlotta Rebello. Well, that's all for this perfectly scheduled edition of The Urbanist. To read more about transport innovators, make sure that you grab the new February issue of Monocle magazine. It's on a newsstand near you right now. And of course, you can also become a subscriber at monocle.com. Today's episode, well, it was produced by Carlotta Rebello and David Stevens, and David also edited the show. And to play you out of this week's episode, well, here's Bonobo with Transits. Thank you for listening, City Lovers.